Well, good morning, church.
Good morning.
What a glorious and beautiful time we are in. We're so thankful for the break in the late summer fall heat that we're having last week. And boy, when it came on like this, it just felt like a breath, literally, of fresh air. So thankful for that. But I'm also thankful for you all and to be gathered together for us today of celebration and worship and Thanksgiving. It's just a great, great thing. A community event that's coming up that I really want us to remember, and if you have not already participated in this before or are unaware of it, it's called the Out of the Darkness Walk, and it's a fundraiser for suicide prevention, and it is put on by a local group, and it's going to be Saturday, September 21st. Normally they meet at Rotary Park in just beside the rec center there, but this year the walk is going to be starting at College Street Elementary, and I think they're going to be just walking to Tullahoma and back. Not quite that far, but it's like a little 5K walk, something like that, and most people do walk. There are some, you know, super ambitious people who like to run it, but generally it's just a walk, and your team tries to raise funds that go towards some great charities for suicide prevention. So I really want us to be engaged with something like that in our community. Now, as Peter talked about earlier, we are thinking about our elders and what's wrong with them and what we'd like to complain about. If you haven't told him already, just let him know. To be serious, we are thinking and planning and hoping and praying about appointing more elders, new elders, either to go along with our existing elders or all new. They had the good grace to step back and say they want to leave themselves out of the process. They are trusting in the congregation to do that. Bernard Brown, which you've probably never heard of him, but he was the president of this large hospital group that was down in Georgia, or still is down in Georgia. And he told a story about one of his patients. It was an elderly man who was in his hospital bed, and he accidentally knocked over his cup of water, spilled it onto the floor there beside his bed. And the patient was afraid that if he got up, he would hit that puddle of water and slip and fall, so he called to his nurse's aide and asked her to mop it up. Well, what the patient didn't know was that the hospital had a policy that said small spills were the responsibility of the nurse's aides, and large spills were supposed to be mopped up by the hospital's housekeeping department. So the nurse's aide looked at that spill and decided that's a large spill, and so she called the housekeeping department. The housekeeper arrived, and she looked at the spill, and she said, "No, that's not a big spill. That's a small spill. You're supposed to clean that up." "And it's not my responsibility," said the nurse's aide, "because it's a large puddle." And the housekeeper said, "Well, it's not a large puddle. It's not my responsibility. The puddle's too small for it to be my responsibility." So the patient is just meanwhile sitting there the whole time listening to this argument between the hospital staff. And so he took the pitcher of water that was on his nighttime stand and poured the whole thing on the floor. They turned and looked at him, and he said, "Is that puddle big enough for y'all two to decide?" It turns out it was. This morning, as we're starting this process of choosing elders, shepherds, leaders, we sit here thinking about what sort of leaders we'd like to have. We want to know who is willing to be responsible for cleaning up our messes. We want to know who's willing to overtake that responsibility, to oversee the messy situations that we create as a community or individually. Who's willing to take that on and address that? And so you may be thinking, you know, we're thinking about leaders here, and we try to think of good models of leadership, and we maybe even look back over our lifetimes or even beyond that, think about who are the great leaders that we'd like our elders to be like. And maybe you're thinking of someone like, you know, Winston Churchill. Oh, just a respected elder statesman who led his country and the Allies through a difficult time of crisis. Or maybe like Ronald Reagan, and you know, that's my childhood president, who was a great leader and led us against the forces of of communism and all that, leaders of great willpower and determination under duress. Or maybe you're thinking more modern, or leaders who are really innovative, leaders like Steve Jobs, right, from Apple, who just created an entire new industry, really on his back and his imagination. Or the great, though he is unrelated, Jack Welch. Now, if you are in business, you might know the name Jack Welch. He was the CEO of GE, and he literally wrote the book on corporate leadership. I mean, he is the guy. If you're talking about leadership, you're talking about Jack Welch. And all these men, they had great power, they had great influence. They shaped not just their communities or their industries, they shaped entire generations, right? They shaped entire cultures of people. But instead, this morning, of us trying to pick what's our favorite flavor of leadership, I thought it might be helpful for us to go a little further back, back before, you know, modern corporations, back before world wars, back before, even before the founding of the church, back to ancient Israel and their history of elders. Now, as we go back to the Old Testament this morning, there are lots of mentions. If you have a Bible with a concordance, or maybe you have even access to a complete concordance, you can look up elders and you'll see they're all throughout the Old Testament. And then they go all the way back to Genesis and really are all the way through talking about elders. And sometimes it's different words that are used, but generally the same words that are used. And this morning we're like, wait, we're a New Testament church, right? So what in the world do these ancient elders of Israel have to do with, you know, what Paul says in 1 Timothy or what Paul says in Titus? And I just want to tell you that it appears Paul's understanding of traditional elders' roles, what's talked about in the Old Testament, that informs what he says to the churches in the New Testament. So all he says about morals or character or attributes, he appears to be a drawing on this ancient eldership tradition, so that we will be able to better understand what Paul is talking about once we better understand what Paul is referencing. If that makes any sense, right? So we're looking back to the Old Testament in order to better understand the New Testament. It gives us a sort of a platform. It's not equals, it's not the same exact thing, but it does inform what they're saying, so it can inform our understanding. And as we look back at the Old Testament, looking back through their history, it appears that there were roughly three different groups that were referred to as elders, by the title of elders. The first group is often referred to as the elders of Israel. And maybe you're familiar with this group. If you've read the story about Israel's wanderings in the wilderness, they were the ones who were chosen by Moses when he had become overwhelmed with the responsibilities of leadership. And he's like, you know, people are bringing me these cases all day, every day, and all I do is sit here and decide arguments. And his father-in-law helped him. And in some places, like in Numbers and Leviticus, it says there were 70 that were chosen. Here's from Numbers 11, the Lord said to Moses, bring me 70 of elders, Israel's elders, who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come to the tent of meeting that they may stand with you there. And I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take some of the power of the Spirit that is in you, and I will put it on them so that they will share the burden of the people with you so that you don't have to carry it alone. So these elders that were 70 or so appointed, they functioned something like national leaders. They in more of a judicial sort of way. They judged some select cases, but mainly the cases that sort of helped decide or have an influence over the whole nation. Later, this same body of elders, by the way, it persisted. It wasn't just while they were in the wilderness. It persisted when they came into the promised land, persisted through the kingship, persisted even through when they went into exile, when they went into Babylonian exile. Now, they weren't able to do it the exact same way, but they had elders over quarters of the people. You know, the the Jewish people were housed in certain areas, and you have an elder over this area and over that there. And when they come back from Babylonian exile, at some point, this body becomes known as the Sanhedrin that we see in the New Testament. They decide, not all the cases, but they decide really important cases, right? So that's the first group. Second group of elders were the elders of the king's house. And they functioned something like administrative advisors in the royal court. So we take, for example, the story of Rehoboam. Now, Rehoboam was Solomon, here's King David, King David's son Solomon. And Solomon had a son named Rehoboam who was taking over the kingship after Solomon died. So after Solomon died, we read that said, then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who had served his father Solomon during his lifetime. How would you advise me to answer these people? He asked. And these advisors, these elders, they give him this advice. They said, if today you'll be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they'll always be your servants. In other words, you serve them and they'll in turn serve you. They were giving him really good advice. Now, Rehoboam was a hardhead. He didn't listen. But that doesn't change the function of these elders. In modern times, we might think of them something like a president's advisory council or maybe even the cabinet, right? They advised the king on what to do in certain situations, but they did not have the power on their own to sort of carry out these actions. All they did was to give their advice. But neither of these groups, neither the elders of Israel nor the elders of the king's house, neither of these groups seem to fit what Paul is talking about when he comes to the New Testament. Rather, those elders of the New Testament seem to more closely fit the elders we see referenced most often in the Old Testament. And those were city elders, the city elders. Now, these elders were leaders of larger extended families, not like the entire family group, but usually people who were descended from a single ancestor. So when the story of Achan, for instance, Achan, as they're wandering through the wilderness and they come up and they take their first city and Achan steals something, takes something he's not supposed to take, and they were like, we got to figure out who's causing all this problem. And so they determine that it's from this tribe, right? This bigger group, the tribe like Judah or Benjamin or you know, any of the Simeon, whatever tribe it's from. And then you got inside the tribe, you've got different clans, which was a much larger extended family group, goes back to an ancient ancestor. And then you get all the way down to family groups, your family, your father's house. In Achan's example, it was his grandfather. Even though his grandfather's died, they're still a part of this grandfather's house. So you've got all the descendants of Achan's grandfather, and they know it's in this household somewhere. Usually groups of like 20 to 2, all the way up to 200 people, depending on how many kids and grandkids and great-grandkids you might have. They were called, this was my father's house, right? The father is this near ancestor, this minimal extended family. And so someone inside those families, usually a grandfather or great-grandfather, whoever was considered an elder statesman. Didn't have to be the oldest person, but it had to be somebody from this household. And now these extended families, they functioned kind of like the way a nuclear family would today. A nuclear family is like mother, father, kids. So in my household, it would be me and my wife, and I've got a son, and I've got a daughter, and we are all sort of just a unit. Right, and if something went wrong with my son, I would say, okay, son, what can we do to help you with your problem? Right, whether it's health or financial or relational, whatever it is, we're all going to work on this together. And if something happened with my wife, right, we're all working on this together. We're a group. Well, in traditional Jewish families, this was not just mother, father, kids. This was that family group, the clan, so that if there was a problem with your, say, your first cousin, it was treated the exact same way as if it was a problem with your brother or a problem with your son. You're all in this together. It's one family group. A financial burden is a financial burden for everybody to deal with. A legal problem is a legal problem for the whole family to deal with. A health problem was a health problem for the whole family group to deal with. It was a single unit. And out of this single unit, you appointed someone who was sort of your spokesperson, right? This person was chosen as a leader to speak for you in the city or in the town or in the community where you live. This was your elder. So we read, like in Deuteronomy chapter 32, they're advised to remember the days of old, consider the generations long past. Now, what if you don't know those? Where do you find out? He says, go ask your father, and he'll tell you. Your elders, and they will explain it to you. These were your elders. And looking at the way these elders, these city elders, function, we go to the book of Ruth, and we see that they were supposed to be experts in their local community. Who knows about what's going on here? These elders know about what's going on here. Well, they know who comes and goes because they sit by the city gate. So anybody who's coming in or going out, they know them. They may not remember their name, Peter, but they know who they are. Right? They are experts on their local community. Also, they're available for consultation. If you've got a question and you need wisdom or you need instruction or you need a dispute settled with your spouse or your neighbor or whomever, that was their job. They're available right there all the time, regularly. And these elders were keepers of the collective wisdom or the memory of the community. In other words, they were charged with remembering the people and the deeds that have gone before so that you're not starting with a blank slate every generation. These elders were responsible for remembering the stories their grandfathers told them and their stories those grandfathers told them. It was just passed down, this collective memory for a community. So that's the way they function in the book of Ruth. You see that when Boaz wants to take Ruth and Naomi in, or he wants to take Ruth in, he has to go to the elders and talk about it and how Ruth is attached to this piece of property, not physically, but her person belonged to this land. And he was like, who can buy this land? The elders have to have first thing. And it was a whole big discussion, and these elders got to make a wise decision about that. So looking further through the Old Testament, we see that these city elders had some basic attributes that Paul later incorporates in his later New Testament writings. And we're not going to go through all of them. We're going to look at four of them this morning. Now, generally, these elders, these city elders, were known to be financially successful, but more than that, they were known to be financially savvy, right? And most importantly, it wasn't just how they got money. It was what they did with it. They were known for generous hospitality. The city gates were not just convenient going in and out or for settling disputes. They were where the needy would go to get help. So, for instance, if you were a widow and your husband's passed away and you don't have any sons to take care of you and you don't have enough, you're not making enough money at your side job or whatever it was you did, you can't make enough money to get by, where do you go for help? Right? I mean, there's no Social Security. There's no local charity. You go to the city gates. And usually this help was distributed in the form of food. So it would have been going to the city elders, and those people were responsible for caring for the health and the needs of the poor, of the orphan, of the widow, of the alien, of the stranger, whoever had needs, these elders were responsible for taking care of them. So there's the first one. They had generous hospitality. Second attribute, their character exemplified the ethics and morality that was most important to the community. Now, as you look all over the world, everybody's got morality. It's a morality of some sort or another. If you go to the most remote regions of the world that are sort of still out of contact with the modern world. You'll find that they have a set of ethics or morality. And some of those things will look the same as most of ours, and some of them will be unique to that group. But elders were supposed to exemplify whatever values were most important to your community. They were chosen because they were really good at demonstrating what was important, like is kindness really important to your people? Great. Or what if it's a wartime and you're afraid, so you're less worried about kindness, you're more worried about making wise decisions under duress. You need elders that can do that. You're afraid of being out of favor with God. You really want elders who demonstrate godliness, right? Or mercy or wisdom or whatever morality or ethics is most important to your people, you choose elders who exemplify that, right? All these things, and sometimes they're hard to explain, they're hard to quantify, but people knew it when they see it. They were like, this person has what we as a community need. Thirdly, they were well-versed in their people's religious practices, customs, and history. If you had a question about how am I supposed to please God, I'm in this situation. I've got a financial burden I don't know how to take care of. I'm in a business partnership, and my partner has done this. What am I supposed to do to still be pleasing to God? I've made an oath, and how do I carry that out? Or my wife has done this, or my husband has done that. How do I best please God? The best way for knowing how to do that was supposed to be known by the elder. An elder was supposed to be the first person you think when you have a question. Who do I figure out? How do I figure out how to please God? An elder should be the first person you think of to answer that question. Who do I want to lead me through this difficult situation? I'm going to talk to so-and-so, right? So they're supposed to be experts in your religious practices and history. And finally, they were supposed to be, I would say great orators, but I think that gives us the wrong idea. They were supposed to be known as someone who was respected, that people listened to when they spoke. This is not to say, and all of you who are thinking, well, that it means so-and-so can't be an elder, or it means I can't be an elder. We're not talking here about you're supposed to be a professional motivational speaker who gets on TV and sells people on a program. We're not talking about you're supposed to be Perry Mason in the courtroom, for those of you who are a little bit older. This is not that sort of great speaker. The way that they thought about it, it was supposed to be people that you pay attention when they're talking because they're going to say something really good and important. It doesn't have to be they have the best voice, they have the best Bible lesson or the best sermons or anything, but when they talk, you listen because they're going to say something worth listening to, right? So this morning, as we're deciding, like, as a body, who do we want our elders to be? It would be really tempting, and has often been the case in churches of Christ. This is the whole reason for this lesson, because we've fallen down this trap as a church, not in this congregation specifically, but in general in churches of Christ. We have fallen into this trap often of choosing a board of directors, and that could not be further from the biblical model of elders. It's really tempting, and this is the way it functions in a lot of churches, not just churches of Christ, that you just choose the person who's done the best in business, or the person who has the biggest house, or the person who has the most power or influence in a community, and just choose those people the same way you'd choose board of directors for a business or a corporation. But that was not the biblical model for elders. Rather, you chose someone who best met your community's needs. Our leaders ought to be people who meet our needs as a community of God's believers. We have needs. We have a need for biblical wisdom and understanding. Who can offer that? We have a need for biblical generosity and knowledge. Who can meet that? We have a need for a Christ-like example, someone we can look to and say, I want to have a better way of life. And this person, the way that they deal with their relationships, the way that they treat people, the way that they handle conflict, the way that they handle their finances, the way that they handle their children, I want to do more like that. I don't have to be just like that, but I want to act more like that. I think that they offer a Christ-like model in their living. We have a need for that. Some of the most godly people I've known were completely unremarkable in the communities where they lived because of their financial success. They were just ordinary farmers or plant workers, or they were just ordinary Joes who lived and had a family, but they raised good kids, they had good marriages, they treated people right, they were listened to and respected in their churches. They offered something their community needed, whether it was compassion or wisdom or mercy, whatever it might be, that need. Those were the men who stepped up and filled those shoes of leadership. And this morning, we still have needs. We have some really godly elders currently. I am very thankful for the three elders that we currently have. I don't remember their names right now, but I remember they're really good guys. Now, David, Peter, and Russ are all, they're great leaders. And I'm thankful to also work with Mr. Morris and work with Joel as well. Just great godly men to lead our congregation. And we are in need of more leaders like that. Men who will lead us through good decisions with wisdom and integrity and honor. My prayer for us as a congregation is that we may be wise in how we choose our elders. And if we can help you this morning, encourage you, we want you to know we're here for you. If we can do any of that now, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?